Begin the next section, which is really the title of this section of Tanakh is called Love and Pain, because this is like one couldn't have lahavdil written a novel with more complexity and more pain and at the same time love. And it's so this perek itself that we're about to engage in perek Yod Ches in Sefer Shmuel Aleph is just a roller coaster of emotion, and it's going to continue. You know, I think it's really indicative of the human state, and just if we think about it, how powerful and how complex human beings and fragile and fallible we are at the same time. You know, lahavdil, elef alfei hevdalot. You know, when you talk about, you know, like for those people who are Harry Potter fans, you don't have to admit publicly. We all know who spent the night making sure our kids knew were ahead of the game, and so when we read Harry Potter, the beauty of the if you think about it, you know, forget all the fantasy aspects of it. The one of the most incredible things that Lahavdil. Oh yeah. For those people like me who are Lord of the Rings fans, very different book. But one of the beauties J.K. Rowling was able to do is she created a person called a Snape, who was a person who hated this boy Harry so much and loved him so much at the same time, because that was really the crux of the whole book, is could you trust him on either side? Because on the one hand he so loved him because he loved his mother, but he so hated him because of his father. And that complexity was brilliant. That was really one of the leading themes throughout all the seven books. And I think that's really captures a lot of who we are. You know, when we think about people, there are very few people, you know, in our lives and spheres we can say, oh, we really hate 100% or we really love 100%. It's complex. It's very complex. That's the way it is. We have numerous experiences. We have mixed emotions. And as we go through this perek, just the complexity of the relationship of David and Shaul is going to develop, not just within their vacuum, but in terms of the context of the family constellation. This is going to be the challenge of this relationship. It's going to be very complex. It's never going to be one feeling at one all the time. It's going to vary all the time. So with that, we're going to look at the text. And again, as opposed to like just doing a summary, let's look at the words, let's see what emerges out, what Tanakh is really telling us about this, and try to walk away with some things, with some valuable understandings and lessons. So with that in mind, what we're going to do is, again, we're going to move in sections. So in the text section of the shir, what I did was I tried to delineate the sections we're going to move from. I also wanted to mention that the shir is Le Refua Shlema Aryeh Leib Ben Rivka. It should be a Refua, it should be Shlema. And should be Bakarov. I try to divide up the different sections of text so between the double lines is where we're going to look at each sets of psukim. We'll call them little quatrains or paragraphs. And in those paragraphs, then we're going to think about that. So the first step is the following. Let's do these first five psukim and then think about what's going on. So each one's its own little section. This first section is about David and Yonatan. Vayhi kachalosan adaber el Shaul, v'nefesh Yonasan nikshara b'nefesh David, vayehavehu Yonasan kenafshoy. So after David and Shaul finish a conversation, this after means immediately following the aftermath of the fight of David and Goliath. Then, as that conversation ceases, there's this soul bond between Yonatan and David, and he loves him like his soul. And at this point in time, David is taken by Shaul HaMelech, and he wasn't allowed to return home. He brings him to his own palace. So we're jumping between two different themes here, right? On the one hand, there's the relationship of Yonatan and David, and then Shaul HaMelech sort of interceding in this relationship. And they cut a covenant between the two of them in his love of him. And Yonatan takes off his coat and he gives it to David. Umadov and his garments, this is like his royal apparel. va'ad charboi, va'ad kashtoi, va'ad chagoroi, all his war equipment he gives to David. Va'yetzei David b'chol asher yishalchenu Shaul, and David goes out in all the missions of Shaul, yaskil, he's successful, va'yisimeu Shaul al anshei ha'milchama, and Shaul places him on the head of the war effort, va'yitav b'enei chol ha'am, v'gam b'enei Shaul. He is loved, or he is pleasing in the eyes of the people and in the eyes of the servants of Shaul. This is a very confusing bunch of psukim for a number of reasons. Let's think about this just carefully. Do you notice that it's almost in an alternating story? There's almost like two stories going on in those short five psukim. There's the one story that's being told is about Yonatan and David. The other story being told is Shaul dealing with David, right? So it's almost as if they're both Shaul and Yonatan are jockeying, in a certain sense, the text is putting up for control over David, maybe, or for David's attention, or David's space. That's what it sounds like the text is building us up over here. But it goes on beyond that, because if you look at this over here, is David active in any of these psukim? David is completely passive. David HaMelech is, if you think about this, Yonatan loves David. That's the pasuk number one. Shaul takes David to his palace. Pasuk number two. Pasuk three. Yonatan creates a covenant with him. Does it say that they created a covenant? No, it says he created a covenant, meaning Yonatan is the active partner in this relationship. Right? And then Yonatan takes off his garb and gives him the royal garb to David. David again is passive. And then David goes out, because meaning to say he does whatever Shaul says, right? He follows the orders and he's successful. Everybody loves him. It's unbelievable. David HaMelech hasn't said a word in all this. Now, obviously, he's living and he's dealing and he's speaking. But the way Tanakh is framing it is that David HaMelech over here is just doing the regular things in his life. And this is all happening. The drama is all happening around him. Just before we even get any further. Really, really fascinating description over here. One would wonder, just like even just reading this psukim, you would wonder if Shaul's trying to interrupt what else is going on. You kind of wonder if Shaul is seeing what's happening. He's seeing this friendship blossoming, and he keeps shifting David around, right? You don't know if the two are related to each other. Maybe that's the break and flow of this. You know, it's like the parent who doesn't want their child to be with a bad influence, right? So we know the feeling. You just want to avoid them. You set up other play dates, and you do other things to them, and you try to get them to like something else, and you buy them other toys, and they keep hanging out with that kid. Right, so it sounds a little bit like what Lahavdil, what's going on over here with Shaul and Yonatan, when one would wonder. Yes.
Is that an echo of Yosef?
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting Tanakh echoes over here. Really interesting, and I'd like to try to develop them a little bit later on for the following reasons. We see a really interesting, you know, idea of this taking off of the robe and giving it to David in a symbolic side gesture of power. What's fascinating about that over here is it's the flip side here, because here it's the son of the scion of Yosef who's taking off his cloak, which was the favorite child's cloak, being given back to the scion of Yehuda. If you think about what's happening over here, which is it's exactly the opposite of what was happening over here, and it's almost a moment of submission. Rav Foreman has a really very fascinating analysis of this in Parshas Vayigash. And if I'm not mistaken, and how the two relate, so we'll try to delve into that a little bit later on. There's a lot of drama. This is obviously a very humbling moment for Yonatan, what he's doing. We're going to get into the real kishkas of that soon. But let's just try to appreciate one thing first. Is that let's try to appreciate context. If we think about this, just reverse for a second. What has just happened before now was the miraculous battle between David and Goliath, the weak underdog overcoming the powerful giant of the Philistines, and he comes back from the battle and he's holding the head of Goliath, and that is conversation. And Shaul says, "Where are you from?" That's really the end of what's just happened, and now suddenly we pop into this, and Yonatan has found this incredible friendship and endearment with David. Like, What happened? Like, what? Why is Tanakh telling us that right now exactly? So There is a very incredible statement made by the Al-Sheikh. The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh, if we turn to the Mefarshim page just for a moment, in source 1, the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says the following statement. He says, just in the first source, we're not going to do the whole thing, but from the middle of the first line, starting from the period, he says the following. V'hu, ki besof devarav ba'omroi beis halachmi. When we found out, when Shaul found out and his audience found out that David came from Bethlehem, from Beis Lechem, Hora ki miperetz ka'asi. Then he realized that's the area where the ancient family of Peretz, the son of Yehuda, settled. Va'az nis'ameis le'yonatan ki elov noigea ha'malchus me'es Hashem. Yonatan realized, wow, wait a second, here you have a very successful extraordinarily successful soldier who seems to have God right on his right shoulder as he wages his battle. And then we find out that he comes from the heartland of Yehuda. So what does Yonatan realize? Yonatan realizes, this sounds like, this smells like kingship. So therefore, says the Al-Sheikh already, at this point in time, as sara mimeno kinas kichtoi hamalchus mimeno. Yonatan realized that in fact the kingship was belonging to David and not to whom? Himself. Think about that. He is the crown prince. So at this moment in time, now folks, let's think about politics. We don't have to think too far to think how far people go not to back down on words they said, which were absolutely 100% incorrect. Right? We don't have to look far to see what politicians will do to back up an opinion which was clearly, unequivocally rejected publicly. Here you have Yonatan. Yonatan has every right to believe that he is still holding on to that dream of his future. What's the Al-Sheikh telling us? He saw this, he realized, and what did he do? At that moment in time, he took off his coat. Wow! Have you ever met anybody that intellectually honest in your life? I mean, he's grown up with a purple cape, you know what I'm saying? And here he is taking it off and giving it to David. Wow, that's just remarkable. I wish we could meet Yonatan. I mean, have you ever met anybody like this? That's what Al-Sheikh is telling us is happening over here. So the juxtaposition of the war with Goliath and the finding out of the origins of David is followed by Yonatan's love of David. Why? Because of his realization of who David really is. And it's so fascinating because Yonatan realizes it faster than Shaul realizes it. Shaul, at this point in time, doesn't seem to really know the full import of who David is. And Yonatan, who stands to gain far more than Shaul, is the one who actually rises. Wow. I mean, this is just remarkable. This is just from the Pesukim. Yes.
When Shmuel told Shaul that he wasn't going to be king anymore, did Yonatan know that?
I don't know. You know, it sounded like that happened in private. I would imagine that he would know. I would imagine that he would know because, you know, otherwise, you know, anytime there's a successful soldier, you know, does that mean? So I would imagine that he does know that there's this ominous cloud. We don't know when, we don't know how, we don't know who. But he feels that he can see where this is going. Okay, Shaul certainly knows this, but Shaul is not reading the writing on the wall right now at this point in time. Okay, so This is how we have it. That's just really a very, very fascinating insight. It is very interesting. Now, coming to like another wrinkle in human psychology over here. So we all notice that in Pasuk Gimel, there's this covenant being drawn between the two of them. And the Al-Sheikh and many of the Mefarshim points out that it is only a unilateral, not a bilateral contract. Because it says, Vayichrois, he wrote a covenant, Yonatan and David, Yonatan and David, which means to say that David didn't need to really sign, right? David HaMelech wasn't committing to something necessarily, it doesn't look like, right? So it sounds like in the position of need, you know, like whenever you're negotiating a position, you want to know how much each side has, how much demand there is, how much need there is on the other side. It sounds like David needs this less than Yonatan needs this, which is fascinating because Yonatan is the everything. He is the power in society, and we've seen how powerful Yonatan is single-handedly taking on the entire army of the Philistines with his arms bearer. He's not a pushover, right? But nonetheless, Yonatan feels like he needs David. So why is he doing this? Why is it so necessary? So the Al-Sheikh has really told us, yeah, we need this. The Al-Sheikh said, because he sees where this is going. So the question is, and this is a question I think we all have, is that how altruistic are human beings? Which is a great question. Like, how altruistic are we in the end of the day? Is there such a thing as an altruistic human being? I used to have discussions. Is there such a thing as a human being who does things for absolutely the right reasons? Or do you say, no, there's always a bias. There's always something they need. I remember I was in a career development center once, and they were talking about, like, you know, like spreading your resume and job hunting. And I remember they were like, they were saying, wherever you are, you go to the gym, you go to the coffee house, you say hi to somebody, you never know, they might be the person who's going to find your job. So you've got to be so nice. And I'm thinking, like everybody becomes a vehicle to your life, right? You know, it's like, you know, how far are you going to advance my life, right? You know, like, are you useful to me? That's kind of like, you know, the way that, and what a corrupt way of looking at the world and people. But nonetheless, that's you know, so how far does that go? Can you ever say when there's a really good act, can you ever say that really it came from a good place, deep down, all the way through? You say, no, they just really need something. They need that person, right? So the Mefarshim really debate this over here as well, because here we're talking about, you know, the purest terms. We're talking about love, kenafshoy. We're talking about, like, really the greatest terms of endearment and friendship. How far does this go? So it isn't so simple. Take a look, just to see the poles of this, to see how hard this comes out on either side. Let's take a look at source 3 for the Ralbag, and we're going to contrast that to the Malbim, just to see the different levels over here. In source 3, the Ralbag says, the Yidmeh, this is in the Mefarshim packet, the Yidmeh, it seems, Shekoras Yonatan bris im David. Why did he make a covenant with David? Ki ra heyosa melech al Yisrael. He saw that David's going to clearly be the next king. Biroso tov atzlach asai, because he saw his great success. Voleze timtza bameh sheyovar, sheomar Yonatan David, yodati kim loich tim loich al Yisrael, v'komav yodcham amamlechis Yisrael. He says, I know it's coming in your way. So and he goes on in that line. So why is Yonatan doing this? Because it's good for him. I mean, it's good for Yonatan. You wanna have your bets on the right side of the table, right? So like if it's gonna be dad, he's gonna show. So what is he doing? He's stacking. He's hedging, right? He's being very careful over here. That's what the Ralbag says. Now, that doesn't mean to say it was a bad thing, right? But what he is saying is that he knows where this is going. Whereas the Malbim says, no. Don't think so complex, how complex people are. The Malbim says the next source, and altruistically, source 5. Vayichros mitzad Yonatan, sheyodei ha'ava, hoisif lichros imabris. You know why he made a covenant with David? He loved him. This was the ultimate friendship. This was the ultimate bonding of souls. Even though they were different, they were completely different. But nonetheless, they had this unity, clarity of vision. Says the Malbim, don't dig for agendas. Don't dig for that skeptical, critical way of looking at people. He was a good person. He saw a good person. They had a good friendship, and that's what they did. Think about that for a moment. It's such a, like, we, you know, as we grow older, we all like, yeah, that's right, you know, we've seen it all. We, you know, hopefully not. The Malbim says, let him be. Let there be good people. Let there be good actions in this world. And in fact, the Mishneh Perkei Avos corroborates that which the Malbim says. The Mishneh Perkei Avos says that, take a look in source 6. The Mishneh Perkei Avos in Perkei says, Kol ava shi'itzaluya b'davar, batel davar, batla ava. Any relationship where it's dependent on something, so however deep you dig that something into the relationship, when that thing goes away, when I no longer need you because you're not giving me that thing, right, then the relationship falls apart. Right? If it's not dependent on any particular issue, then it is eternal. What is an example of love which was dependent on something? Which was the love of Amnon and Tamar, which we'll get to later on, where that was clearly dependent on Amnon's desire or lust for Tamar. And when that disappeared, then he hated her. And when it is not dependent on something, which means to say that the Mishneh Perkei Avos looks at their relationship, looks at their connection, as a connection which is beyond reasons and agendas and biases and needs and vehicles towards, right? And this gives us hope again, that they can be good people. They can be special things that go on. You know, like I just saw the other day, somebody sent out a video. There was like a kid. There was two kids sticking out their hand in the ball field, and from opposing teams, and the ball came in, and one of them caught it. And he goes, and he's so happy. He runs up the grandstand. His other kid's starting to cry, and he runs down in one moment, and he gives the opposing team's kid this baseball. Like, you know, like there's moments like that. He's like just. It's not because he thinks he's going to get better marks because that teacher is somebody, that kid is his teacher's son, and he's going to, it's not because of that. He's not thinking about that. There are times where people can just do wonderful things, and there can be good friendships, and that's what the Tanakh is telling us. Remember that. Okay, so that, this is the debate, in that's what the Tanakh is trying to get over here, and you can see the Farshim debate as well. They're also wondering, how far do we take this or not? Anyways, so this is just really in the beginning over here. We see this relationship unfolding, and we see Shaul HaMelech sort of trying to intervene. Why do you think Shaul HaMelech would be interested in taking David HaMelech to his palace? But David HaMelech is just one. He's a shepherd. Why is Shaul HaMelech taking David back home?
Keep an eye on.
Okay, so Mepharshim say, yeah, it's dangerous when if you're going to have a really successful person, it's much better to keep an eye on them, because insurgencies don't arise when your bedroom is on the same hall as the king, right? That's just the way it works. When you go home and you get onto a soapbox and you rally the crowds and everybody goes, hear ye, then that's when the problems start. So he says, I'm going to make sure David HaMelech is on a short leash, and that's why he brings him home. But then the interesting thing is, in these five short psukim still, he's suddenly sending him out to battle. Is he in or is he out? What's the deal over here? What does he want him to stay home? Does he not want him to stay home? Great. So this is a debate. But the Mepharshim say, yeah, he saw it wasn't working. Meaning David HaMelech was just becoming too well liked. So he says, you know, David, why don't you go play with those spears? And you know, like why don't you go out to battle and see what happens there, right? It's very exciting and everything, right? So clearly, either it's not working and he wants to sort of put David in more in harm's way, which sounds unfortunately dramatically familiar in the future, because David does a similar thing, okay, to somebody else a little more pointedly. Okay, so we're going to see how that reflects itself. But nonetheless, we see Shaul HaMelech is trying to, you know, change the track of history, yet it isn't working so well because everybody loves David. Sounds very much like also coming back to the Yosef story. Wherever Yosef went, he just found favor, right? Coming back to the Yosef, the coat. Wherever he went, he found favor, even in the eyes of the servants of Shaul. Why is that an important point? Why does the Tanakh go out of his way to tell us, even the eyes of Shaul, or the servants of Shaul?
They're supposed to be loyal to
Shaul. Okay, so maybe they would be more loyal to Shaul, right, at the end of the day. So they would have wouldn't have turned coats, but it wasn't really so much rebellion at this point in time. Well, what the Mepharshim say is the Radak says, is like, imagine, you've been working here 27 years. You're right, you got tenure as the gardener in Shaul HaMelech's palace, and in walks Mr. New. And suddenly he becomes the top of the pups, right? He walks here, he works there, he gets Yonatan's garb, he's now a general in the army. That ain't fair. I worked myself up. I started off as a doorman, right? And now I worked my way into the garden, right? Think about, like, you know, all these poor people who've worked in Shaul HaMelech's palace. So Zagam Bene al Adai Shaul, the Radak says, even the people who could have had a reason to think, oh, how can Mr. Newby going straight to the top? Even they liked him, right? Even his co-workers, who now became his juniors, liked him. So you can see David HaMelech is really clearly has a certain chen about him, and again, he doesn't seem to be doing too much about it. He doesn't seem to be doing so much. Okay, so this is how much is just packed into five psukim. Let's try to get a little bit of movement over here. What we're going to do is the next little section, which is from Vav to Ches, and then let's try to unpack this. So the psukim tell us the following. So back in the text section, Yisrael. So now what's happening over here is now we're back to the story, right? We rejoin our heroes, because that was an interlude of what was happening in Yonatan and Shaul and David. Now we're kind of back to the battlefield. We rewind a little bit, and here they're all on the way back. They were in the area between the Shvela and the Harim, the mountains of Yehuda. They're coming back to Yerushalayim. And everybody comes out to greet them because they have conquered the giants. The problem is it doesn't work out so well. And every starts making poems and poetry and singing, and the lady starts singing. You know, they make a beautiful poem that Shaul has smitten the thousands and David's the tens of thousands. That's not good news for David, right? He didn't pay them, right? But they're just reflecting what was clear about this battle. Vayichal Shaul Ma'od. Shaul gets exceptionally angry. And this became very upsetting to him. Wait a second. They gave him the tens of thousands. They gave me the thousands. I'm the king, right? Well, you know, now he's going to have. Next thing he's going to have is the melucha. And Shaul starts eyeing David from that time onwards. Now again, let's just stop for a second over here. Has David HaMelech done anything?
No.
David HaMelech hasn't done anything. His proactive role was last Perek. That was when he was going out to kill Goliath. But the reason he was going out to kill Goliath was not because he was one-upping Shaul. It was because he said, how can you stand around while that brute starts cursing Ma'areches Elokim Chayim? How can you allow that to happen? He runs out there without any weapons and kills him. David HaMelech hasn't done anything. It's the rest of the people who are just sort of pointing out what's going on. And remember when we learned about David and Goliath, just to appreciate this a little bit more. When Goliath was asking for a competitor for a duel, it was clear that he was asking for one person and one person alone. He wanted Shaul to come out, and Shaul didn't come out, and Shaul did not want to. For whatever reason, Shaul did not take up the gauntlet which was lying on that floor. So when David walks in and now kills him in one foul blow, right? So what do you expect the song to be about? Of course it's going to be about David because everybody was waiting for the giant to be killed, which Shaul didn't do. Right? So this is not we'll call it advanced mathematics. Right? This is basic, you know, one thing follows the next. And nonetheless, and here you can see Shaul, he's busy scratching his head, you know, like why on the front page of the paper, why is I on the left? Right? I don't understand. I thought when I told the reporter I was supposed to be right. That's right. This is what's going through his mind, and you start seeing in the cognition of Shaul something which we call making a mountain out of a molehill. Right, meaning to say, okay. Meaning that's what happens. Sometimes you're slighted in the public eye. Does that mean that David HaMelech is reaching for your crown? No. Right? But the reason why it seems to be more impactful for Shaul is because Shaul knows something. What does he know? He knows from Shmuel HaNavi that his kingship is being taken away from him, and he doesn't know who it is, and now he sees this person, and he hears what they're saying, and now he's seeing what Yonatan saw a few minutes ago. And he's starting to see that writing on the wall. And so, Vahayi Oyein Es David, let's just go down to the Shoresh of that word. What's the word Oyein mean? So it comes to the word ayin. So he's looking at David. So that Rashi tells us that, you know what's going on over here? Very, very simply, take a look at source 8 in the packet, the Befarshim packet. He says, source 9, oyein ayin ra'a. He's got a bad eye. Meaning to say, there's lots of different ways to interpret this. The basic way of interpreting it is, everything David HaMelech is going to do is bad. Meaning no matter what David does now, It's going to be bad. That's the just well thinking about capitalistically. Whereas the Malbim says no, it's worse than that. The Malbim says Vayir Shaul Oyenes David Nasan Enav Bili Boy. He looked into David Melech's heart over Choshvoi Ki Hu Aish Amar Anavi VeNasna LaReacha Tov Mimeka. He realizes he's my replacement. Shaul finally clicked. He finally put it all together. VeLachen Hischil Lachshav Alav Machshavas LaHargoi. And so now the machinations of murder start, because he realizes that this is my replacement.
Do we believe in Ayin Hara? Sorry.
Yes, we do, absolutely.
We learned in the Torah where someone blessed someone, Yaakov blessed Ephraim and Manasseh, and he said...
V'yigul erov bekerav aretz.
Yeah, that shouldn't
affect you,
right.
Which means it exists.
It exists, but it shouldn't affect his children and grandchildren.
Oh, that's true. Well, you know, we do a lot to worry about, there are a lot of things we do for ayin hara. So it clearly exists even in halacha. There's a lot of things which we do in halacha to avoid ayin hara, which means to say that we can allow ourselves to be in the ayin hara as well. So there is what Yaakov was saying. He said the same thing to Yosef as well, is that he was oile ayin. What he was trying to say is that I hope you manage to go beneath the radar, so that nobody looks at you in that way. And the sad thing over here, if you think about it, you just think about this for a moment, is again, David HaMelech wasn't asking for this at this point in time. Meaning, David HaMelech was doing what he believed was right. And this just brought it on. And there's a sad aspect of leadership here, in a sense, right? David HaMelech wasn't looking for a crown. David HaMelech was looking to do the right thing. And nonetheless, it comes with the territory, unfortunately, of public eye when it comes to leadership. Nonetheless, that's what we see over here, and this is a very sad point, because David and Shaul have a relationship beforehand. David was his musician, right? Because when Shaul had the bad moods, we know that David HaMelech was already playing for him, and now it's more complex because now we have Yonatan who's in the mix. Yonatan loves David, and there's this relationship of Yonatan and David, and it's going to get more complex as we keep going. Let's see. Let's do one more section and then reflect for a moment. So, here we go. We're going to do from Pasuk Yud to Tezayin altogether. Vayhi mimacharas, it was the next day. Vatesach ruach Elokim ra'ah es Shaul. Vayisnabe besach abayis. And the next day, this evil spirit. Now it doesn't mean to say like some sort. It just again, this is when Hashem has removed the prophecy from Shaul. And in the absence of prophecy, it doesn't turn into a neutral, Shaul regular. It turns into Shaul negative, right? There's some, that vacuum leads to a cloud, this terrible mood which sets in on Shaul, and he is having this experience when he's in the house. But David again be Yadai. In the meantime, David is playing for him, kiyom b'yom, as he regularly would. V'achanis b'yad Shaul, and Shaul happens to have a spear next to him. We're going to see that Shaul is going to have a little bit of a spear problem when it comes to David in the next little while. There's going to be a few incidents, so we're going to try to put them all together and see the movement over here. Vayotel Shaul es achanis, vayomer akir b'David v'akir. So Shaul says to himself, I'm going to throw this and hit David and the wall. Vayisav David miponav pamayim, and David moved out of his way twice. And Shaul got scared now because he realizes that as much as Hashem is not with him, Hashem is with David, because David just escaped death twice. So he sends him out, not as a musician now, but as a general of the army. David lechol derachov maskil, and David is once again successful in all his matters. Hashem imoy, God is with him. Vayashol asher hu maskil ma'od vayagar miponav, and the more he sees the success, the more fear he experiences from David. V'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda oheves David, and all of Israel, the northern kingdom, and Yehuda in the southern kingdom, love David ki hu yotzei uval lifnehem, because he goes and in front of all of them. You kind of wish that it would stay like that. It took a long time for David to bring that all together ultimately. So here we have it. So now what is turned from thoughts has turned into actions. Okay. So the Mefarshim actually point out, why is it that suddenly, all of a sudden, Shaul is experiencing this moment of darkness? Why now does he experience this? And what happens?
He's jealous.
So yes, the Mefarshim say, we triggered it. He was muttering to himself about the song, right? Those ladies, tens of thousands, and he's sitting there in his office, turning over the paperweight, thinking about that picture on the front page of the paper, right? And so the Mefarshim say, yes. Well, when you keep thinking like that, then it triggers more and more and more, and it just blossoms into this into the Ruach Ra, which brought about. So the next morning he wakes up with this terrible cloud over his head, whether it be spiritual or emotional, that brings him to the next step, which is to throw the spear. What exactly is he trying to do with this spear? Like, what's he trying to achieve with this?
Connect with
Okay, so Rashi says, Rashi says pretty explicitly, what he's trying to do is he just wants to kill him, right? You know, you don't have to read too deeply into this. He is trying to get the spear through David into the wall, right? That's kind of like that's why there's David and the wall and the wall after David, right? That's the way he understands that. But the other Mephoshim, to take a look just to get a little more nuance than that, let's take a look at source 13 for a moment, the Malbim on the top of page 3. He says, "Vayotel hayarotel akosa kevilti miskaven el David rak el akir ukiilu hiko b'shkaga." Ah, Shaul has a plan. Shaul is not trying to just murder David. Shaul was trying to make it look like there was an accident which occurred. Okay, and so he was kind of like, we'll play darts with David just a little too close to the board, right? And that's what's going to happen, and David HaMelech escapes twice. And Shaul realizes that he's actually trying to hit him, and David is escaping too easily. That's when this all happens. The Malbim is saying over here that, just to appreciate this, the Malbim is moving away from it being an all-out, cold-blooded murder attempt. Meaning like explicit. That's important for us because, you know, like, as fast as this has gone, that's very dramatic if one day he's feeling jealous and the next day he's trying to kill him straight out. The Malbim makes it a little easier to understand is that, no, he's trying to set up a way that David HaMelech would, you know, accidentally have been killed. Just to slow down. You're right. It's just slowing down what's happening here. It is a little more premeditated, yeah. It makes it a little worse in that respect. So, Marjorie, point well taken.
But he could also be just trying to assert his power over it, that he can, you know, like you trip somebody or you just...
So it comes back to Marjorie's point, is that the premeditation sometimes is worse. So we see there's a lot going on over here.
But he knows he's losing that system. He's an intelligent... so interesting because he's an intelligent... person who had
Ruach Kodesh,
and he knows he's losing it. He's not going to die because Hashem's not going to let him die. So
Ellen's raising a good point, and I just think that I think that the
he's not thinking rationally.
Well, he might not be thinking rationally, so we can't. But at the same time, like as much as we can, put rational thought into this particular thing, just to appreciate this. And like again, if we, you know, today I think it's more overt than elsewhere. But if you think about how many people have died or lost all they had rather than to admit they were ever wrong. Think about that. Think about how many people stood by their word and brought their countries to war and sacrificed their families and their possessions not to backtrack on what they said. Just think about that in history. It's shocking. Humans are incredibly stubborn people sometimes. Now, we're not saying we're not trying to say that Shaul is, you know, is that fallible? But just to appreciate this over here, Shaul HaMelech is the king. He doesn't know when the ticking timer is for the end of his kingship, but he wants to make absolutely sure that this young upstart is not going to be the one who's going to bring it any earlier. I want to just do one last point as we finish this over here. And it sounds like, again, that he's sending him out further into the battle in order for David HaMelech to fail, right? To fail in battle. Which is a really, really sort of the next step of the machinations of trying to kill him. The last thing I want to just take a look at is just the Malbim. And again, this just gives us an extra nuance to this. The Malbim is to be found in source 16. So we'll just close this idea. The Malbim says, "Vayasire." Why does he take him out of his house and send him to the further battle? He says, "Choshev la'shpiloi." In fact, we don't know the military terms, but a sar elef isn't a general. A sar elef is maybe a captain. So a captain is a lower position in the army. So what is he trying to do? He is trying to demote him in the ranks, to again give him less grandeur. And even that didn't work. So yeah, you have the colonel, but everybody waits for the captain, right? That's what's happening in this battle over here. Everybody waits for David because they know David is the leader. Leadership isn't a function of promotion. Leadership is a function of taking action, and everybody realizes and David is the leader. So whatever you call him, he's still the leader. That's what's happening over here. So what we see happening over here is that Yonatan's realized, Shaul's realized. They have diametrically opposite reactions to it. Yonatan immediately submits, immediately fosters a friendship. He realizes this is the person who's going to be the next step, and he wants to be this person. Shaul does everything he can, whether it be emotionally, whether it be in terms of position, whether it be trying to kill him in order to get rid of him. Two very diametrically opposite reactions. What lies ahead of us is very exciting, because now we have another two members of Shaul's family, his daughters, Merav and Michal. And it gets more and more complex as we go on to see this. We'll call this almost like a square of love, not a love triangle, but and how complex it's going to be for Shaul HaMelech, and how deep it's going to end. Thank you very much, ladies, and looking forward to continuing in Mitzvah Hashem in the weeks to come.